this okay?
Yeah.
Is this okay right here?
Will they be able to get up and down there?
Tell you what, I'll put it right in the middle here.
All right. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Is it running now?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Whoa.
We heard you.
Frustrating. We'll convene the Labor and Commerce Committee at 4:32. I apologize for the technical difficulties. We've got a problem with the recorder. I would ask that anyone who speaks on the matters today to speak up clearly and loudly, because we are using a temporary mechanical device that we will hope picks up everything you say. I'm sure the secretary would hope that as well, to make her life a little easier. Today we have several measures that we are supposed to take up, to include House Bill 260, which is Marine Pilots, followed by several contract provisions, House Bill 144, 298, 299, 300, and 305. It is not the intent to take up any of the contract provisions today due to the late start, and I understand that several members have to depart at 5 o'clock for other meetings, so we're kind of really restricted here on what we can do in a short period of time. So it is my intent today to hold those contract bills over until Friday, and we'll deal with them then. And it is the intent to at least get through as much as we possibly can with House Bill 260, since we have had this on the schedule this month before and kind of moved it along. So without further ado, I see we do have the bill's prime sponsor here with us. This is the first time that I think most of us on this committee have had the opportunity to hear House Bill 260. So if you would tell us everything we want to know about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Representative Gary Davis, the Chairman of the House Transportation Committee. The House Transportation Committee had some rather extensive hearings on this legislation, and I'll just real briefly go over what we did. There is, I see members of the administration here, members of the Department of Law, and of course the industry and pilot representatives also, so you'll get other feedback from them. House Bill 260 extends the Board of Marine Pilots, which sunsetted June 30th, and is or a sunset clause will sunset June 30th, and there is a portion of the existing law that sunsetted earlier, and that being the maximum tariff provision, which was Alaska Statute 0862045. In our hearings, we had a list of amendments, recommendations from the administration to do a number of house cleaning measures, and those are all incorporated in the bill, and there wasn't a lot of debate or contention among those house cleaning issues. In the sectional analysis, it's rather extensive, has 22 sections to it. The bottom line, I think, is that after our committee heard the debate, there's unquestionably the contentious item was a provision that I had included in the bill, which referred to conflict resolution and was addressed through binding arbitration. The discussion in the committee and the result of a committee vote pull that from the legislation, so there is currently no conflict resolution in the legislation. It is felt, and you will get discussion from the interested parties and the involved parties, that some feel there is no need for it, others feel there is a strong need for it, and others will probably remain neutral. And again, as I indicated, you will hear all the pros and cons on that issue. And I might point out there may be a question on Section 2. One thing we did in Transportation Committee was increase the size of the board. We increased the pilot organizations, members by one, and we increased the industry representation by one on the board. The question that some people have is, well, isn't that an increase in cost? Well, it is, but not to the state. The dues and fees paid for by the organizations pay for the activities of the board, so that's not a concern as far as a fiscal note to the state. There wasn't a lot of debate on that. It was somewhat accepted. I'm not exactly sure. It's been a couple weeks since we heard it. There's been opportunity for people to sit down and reconsider everything that we've done, of course, and exactly how they still feel and how tight each portion is of the bill before you is I better not indicate. But again, I think we'll leave the majority of the debate up to the involved parties. There was a maximum tariff before, and there is some question in the Department of Law. I should leave it completely up to the Department of Law to discuss and explain the antitrust provisions and possible problems from that area as it relates to what will be referred to as the state action exemption. If the state gets an exemption from the federal antitrust laws, then there has to be some rate setting scenario in the legislation. But again, I'd prefer not to just stay out of that. I might say, while I am here, I would probably lean toward the maximum tariff provision. My whole argument in including a conflict resolution language or a clause in the legislation is, since this is mandated by the state, is there an opportunity out there, or will there be an opportunity out there for any emergency provision to provide these services? Is there or could there be an opportunity for a ship movement, a vessel movement, where a pilot would not be provided? If that could ever be the case, how is it going to be handled? What is the resolution to that conflict? And that was my feeling, and it still is, that at the best interest of the state should have something included in the legislation that would address that. And the debate, most of the debate will be centered around that. And I think since maximum tariff was a provision and had been a provision previously, that it would be, I would say, a strong contender for reinsertion to address that conflict resolution. So, Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions, I have a 5 o'clock, and I'll certainly be around as long as Representative Masick doesn't show up, or Representative Sanders, whose seat I'm taking, and will be interested and available for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Let the record reflect that Representative Elton Covino, Porter, Roper, and myself, Cott, are present. I do have at least one question for you. You may or may not be able to answer, but I think under existing law, there's a $250,000 liability limitation. I think there is an exception if the action is based on incompetence. I think in this new bill, that exception is not there any longer, which would seemingly indicate to me a problem as to who would pick up the bill if it exceeded that $250,000 liabilities.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, that wasn't debated extensively enough where I can recollect exactly what the debate was, so I would leave that up to the department to answer.
Any questions for the bill's prime sponsor? Seeing none, I think it would be appropriate at this point to call Gail Horetsky up and tell us your position.
Mr. Bush is here from the Department of Commerce.
Okay.
I'm available if you need a question.
Okay. Then you will call Jeff Bush, and please state your name loudly and clearly for the record.
We have this down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jeff Bush. I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and I'm also the Commissioner's representative on the Board of Marine Pilots. I'm here to testify that the department is fully in support of this piece of legislation right now. I think the prime sponsor has given a pretty good overview of the situation. There are some issues. I think what you're looking at here is a bill that just about everybody here can agree is good. The issue is not what's here, it's what isn't here. And that is where the debate will still go. I have to point out that the department does mildly disagree with the changes made in Section 2 of the bill to increase the Board of Marine Pilot numbers, to add an extra pilot member and an extra industry representative, because that does in fact increase the cost. And we have as the legislature well knows, the cost for occupational licensing boards has to be borne by the licensees by statute, and the Board of Marine Pilots licenses, for example, the pilot licenses right now are at $3,200 a piece per year. So we're talking about a significant amount of money, and we are just interested in trying to keep those costs down in whatever way possible. And increasing a board from 7 members to 9 members does a couple of things. It increases the number of people who have to attend and at the meetings, and airfare and things of that sort, and it also can make board meetings take a little bit longer, because every time you add more people, it takes a little longer to get done with your business. It's a very mild objection, I guess, to that change, but it is something the department that would like to point out to the committee for consideration. On the conflict resolution issue, the department has and will continue to take a neutral position on this issue, whether or not we have conflict resolution or dispute resolution placed into the bill, binding arbitration, or maximum tariff, whatever device or no device that the legislature feels is appropriate. The department doesn't take a position on any of those. We feel that's an issue. The department's interest is in maintaining enough pilots and maintaining safety in terms of quality pilots out there on the waters. And I don't think that when it comes to disputes over what a particular pilot should be paid, that the state should be in the middle of that. So that's essentially my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Jeff, what is the state's primary responsibility?
Safety, no question.
Safety?
Yes. Safety, we talk about two things, safety and availability of pilots, but I think availability of pilots is actually a subgroup of safety. So I think making sure that you have enough pilots and quality pilots available so that every ship gets a pilot. And I guess in some sense we have another interest, which is commerce, which is raised in the availability of pilots issue. We certainly don't want commerce to come to a halt because we don't have enough pilots.
Representative Porter?
Yeah, do you think that the safety issue is dealt with primarily by the qualifications and licensing that the board does?
Yes, I do, and the board has over the past several years been making those qualifications tougher and has focused and concentrated on safety issues and making sure that the pilots are well trained and keep up their training.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Why are you increasing two of the groups and not the public person? Or why would whoever propose this?
Through the chair, I guess. My answer to that is that I guess the groups must have come forward and recommended those changes. That was, as I say, the department's position was that everything was fine before. The argument was made in the earlier committee that there are, in fact, now 3 public representatives, because there's 2 plus the Commissioner of Commerce, and that this is merely equalizing it between industry and the pilots are equal to the public members. It is, in fact, a dilution of the public representation on the board. And I think I can say, although I've never really talked to anybody about it, that we would be concerned about that. But it's not a significant concern because, quite frankly, the board, I have a lot of respect for the people on the board, and I think that they do a good job. And even though you hear about issues like safety and concerns about safety, I think that every one of the various interest groups, their primary interest is safety. The ship owners want to move their product at a reasonable price, but the fact is that when you're dealing with ships of that size and that value, any accident whatsoever is extremely costly. So everybody is concerned about making sure accidents don't occur.
Representative Bell?
Chair. Jeff, I mean, I guess what I found unusual about the makeup of the board is that somebody from the commissioner's office is on, period. How many occupational boards do you have where the commissioner or the commissioner's designee serves, and why is it on this one?
Well, I guess the answer to that is that this is the only one that and the why is, I wasn't around when this was done. I think it's just essentially been tradition that this has been the way it has been forever, and no one has, quite frankly, with the committee, when I took this job originally, one of the things that I wanted to look at was, I sort of said, why is deputy commissioner have to, and traditionally the deputy commissioner of commerce has been the person who sat on that board, why should that person be on this board? And so I raised that issue, and I think that I can say that everyone I spoke to pretty much universally said that it's important for that person to be there, because this board, at least in terms at the moment, there's so much safety interest from this public standpoint that there's a need for someone who is in the government sector, who is also concerned with the public interest, to sit on this particular board until at least, and this was, and I think this is correct, until at least this board works sort of more smoothly and has had longer chance and more time as an occupational licensing organization to get used to sort of regulating itself. That is the rationale. Several things occur. One is that because of this, I end up in an unusual situation where I have to build a Chinese wall between my own staff on investigations and judicial and quasi-judicial proceedings. But that doesn't occur in any other licensing board. But on the other hand, I think that I can say quite frankly that that the Department of Commerce is much more active on this board than any other because of my seat here.
Additional questions? Jeff, I asked a question of Bill's prime sponsor regarding the $250,000 limit regarding liability. I'm not sure if I just missed it or if it has been removed from the current provision. And if so, what would happen if that liability exceeded $27,000 as an act of negligence or incompetence?
15,
right? Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't know why. I when you raised the question, I started thumbing through the bill.
Section 15.
It is still there. There it is. Thank you. I was going to say I couldn't remember any testimony to take it out, and therefore I was surprised that it might be gone. But no, it is still there.
I guess this says that the pilot's license is not liable for damage excessive of $250,000.
It doesn't apply essentially in cases of gross negligence, willfulness, or I believe it's alcohol or drug abuse kinds of situations.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll next hear from Paul Foods.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm here today representing Captain Eric Eliasson, who's the chairman of the Southwest Pilots Association, who pilot ships in South Central Alaska, Cook Inlet, Prince William Sound, and Kodiak. And Captain Eliasson is also the chairman of a group called the Alaska Statewide Pilots Alliance. And as a lot of you know, this has been very contentious in the past. So this was an effort to try to pull the pilots together and see if we could reduce some of the level of contention and come up with some recommendations for the legislature on marine pilotage that could reduce some of the fees and the lawsuits and things like that. And I think the legislation before you really does that. And I think the department laws here, they could also testify to that. That was part of their concerns, was the level of litigation, and this really helped solve a lot of those problems. One of the things that the group agreed to is if they would accept the competitive model that the legislature adopted in 1991, where you can have more than one pilot groups per region. And here's where the rub comes in terms of tariffs. You've got competing groups that are negotiating for contracts, and yet here comes a proposal for the government to come in and set tariffs when they're supposed to be competing. And it kind of really doesn't add up. That's why there's been some
some friction on this. And it's kind of like you have one or the other. What Southwest Pilots Association said, we would accept binding arbitration. I think we were the only group that said that, because that would allow us to negotiate freely with industry like any other industry and have a method of conflict resolution without the government being involved in the business of setting tariffs. But apparently that was not acceptable. We would have gladly accepted that provision, but it's not in there. So in the absence of that, we don't support the government setting tariffs. We'd like to see the bill go through as it is in its current form here. But I wanted to just explain that to you as to why sometimes this doesn't seem to add up, a competitive position with also imposing tariffs by the government. The other issue on the liability, Mr. Chairman, I believe I can answer your question here, and this was something that the pilots agreed on. What the bill says is that you've got a limit of your liability of $250,000 for what you can go after a pilot for if they make a mistake and a ship runs aground. Now, you lose that limitation of the liability if you did it on purpose, if it was willful, if it was grossly negligent, or you were on alcohol or drugs. That means that if you, say, were drunk and ran a ship aground, they could go after your house, they could go after any holdings that you had, unlimited. They could take everything that you own. So it's unlimited liability. Now, the previous law said if you're under any board sanction, you would lose the limitation of liability. That could be for something as small as the board wrote you a letter of reprimand because you didn't file your paperwork properly. And it wasn't felt that that would justify losing your limitation of liability. Now, it's actually a double insurance because every ship is insured anyway, but in addition to that, the pilot knows that they could lose everything that they own if they willfully run a ship aground, are grossly negligent, or on alcohol or drugs. And I think that's a significant incentive to make sure that these guys operate to the best of their ability in a safe manner.
Well, if I might just interject, for common negligence, the cap is $250,000.
That's correct.
And beyond that, you'd have to go after the shipper?
The shipper's insurance would cover any damage beyond that. And the shipper could actually have a claim against the pilot if they were on drugs or alcohol or were willfully negligent also. They did $2 million worth of damage and the guy had a $2 million house, you could go after it if it was for those provisions, but not if you had a letter of reprimand in your file from the board on paperwork. It just was felt that was too wide open. That's why this issue was addressed. It was the same limitation of liability that an airline pilot has also. I think that's really it. There have been other issues raised very late here, including the issue of cross-regionalization. I understand that's not going to come up here today, so I'm not going to address it. But I think that this bill is a substantial improvement, should help stabilize this industry, and we would encourage you to pass it out in its current form. I'd say one more thing. Southwest Pilots did not take a position on composition of the board. We didn't support or testify against adding people to the board.
Questions?
Thank you very much. Next, Dan, DCED.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dan Tuhig. I'm the Marine Pilot Coordinator, and I work with Jeff Bush. My position, I'm here to introduce myself, actually. My position was created by the Marine Pilotage Act 1991, and my job is to oversee the day-to-day operations of the Board of Marine Pilots. I'm their executive secretary, and I work with the Department of Commerce as a licensing examiner. And I also act as a state's investigator for maritime matters. I fully agree with Jeff Bush. I think this is a good bill. And the housekeeping measures, most of the housekeeping measures that you see in there were written by me. So basically, I'd just like to introduce myself. And if you have any questions, I probably know more about the ins and outs of these bills than just about anybody.
Representative Cabina.
Well, then, where did the adding the board members come from? Who's pushing that?
Mr. Chair, The adding of board members was an amendment that was added from somewhere outside the Department of Commerce. And so exactly who wanted to add it, I don't know.
Representative Davis.
Additional questions? I don't know if this should be directed to you or not, but on page 3 of the bill, where it talks about temporary licenses, like the issue or reissue, there in line 9, temporary license issued under subsection is valid for a period of not more than 1 year. My question, I guess, would be, can a temporary license either be reissued or renewed? Are there additional requirements?
The addition of this language here was suggested by the Alaska Pilots Alliance. And the original bill has a clause in here in 08-62-080. It says a pilot may not be licensed in more than one region at a time unless the board determines it's in the best interest of the state to do so. And the pilots, the Pilot Alliance came forward and said, well, we need to define better what that is. And so, to answer your question, I think that a temporary license is, in this case here, is designed to take care of a specific problem of a shortage of pilots. For instance, there's a plane crash and 20 pilots die. We're going to have an instantaneous shortage, has to be addressed somehow, and in order for the system to keep moving and to bring things in line and until the pilot associations or in that area can cover the shortage, there has to be a mechanism for the state to issue these licenses on a temporary basis and spread things a little wider.
So let's say, for instance, that after 1 year that shortage still exists. Would the license be reissued or renewed? Or continued?
It would be my understanding that it would be renewable. And, you know, at the discretion of the board, or the board, in this case, the commissioner makes the determination that there's a shortage. If the shortage still exists, then you still have a problem and you can reissue them. I would assume that would have to be cleaned up in regulation to decide exactly what that process is. So the regulations don't address this right now. But it would have to be cleaned up a little bit in that respect.
What is the process for issuing these temporary licenses?
Right now there is no process. Since the Marine Pilot Act of 1991, there has only been one instance where the board determined that they needed to issue endorsements to licenses for more than one region. And that was a transitional regulation that was written that allowed pilots in Region 2 to train pilots in the newly created Region 3 and to bring them up to speed in Port of Dutch Harbor. And those endorsements to those licenses had their own life. They had a cutoff date on them, and what we had discovered was that the training problem was taken care of before that time period elapsed and the licenses went away by themselves of their own accord. If there had continued to be a shortage, I am fairly sure that the board would have extended it through regulation.
Okay, further Representative Walton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Kind of a follow-up on the chair's question earlier, and I wish I had looked while the previous testifier was up. But again, back to the liability question, where it seems to me that it changes, and I just looked up the existing statute. This would exempt this new language in Section 15 essentially means that the cap of $250,000 would apply now, even if the pilot is determined incompetent in the performance of pilot duties or is guilty of misconduct during the course of employment. It seems to me that's maybe more than housekeeping to take those out of the existing statute and apply the cap. And that seems fairly substantive.
Mr. Chairman, to answer your question, Representative Elton, this amendment to the law was also requested by the Pilots Alliance. The Department of Commerce had no problem with it, and I think that the thing you need to look at closely here is again, the pilots now have a limitation of liability of $250,000. In a maritime accident, $250,000 goes awful fast. And by removing the portions of the law that say if you for instance, are incompetent. You could be, it's a legal question, but you can be incompetent for a moment. You can be incompetent for a long period of time. You could be totally incompetent, and that's it was a legal question. I think that the teeth is still there in the law. There's willful misconduct. There's gross negligence, which is something that is often tried to be proven in maritime cases, and also there are the drug and alcohol provisions. When I was in the military, the law that we have now, when I was in the military, they referred to it, they couldn't get you for something important, it'd be for a shoe shine. And as Paul Foose testified, the pilots were concerned that literally, if they got a letter of reprimand from the board for something very minor, they would lose this limitation of liability.
Can I ask you a question?
Well, I guess I'm not yet not prepared to make an amendment, but I mean, to me, incompetence. I mean, having a cap imposed because you're incompetent may not seem fair to me. But, I mean,
Yes, sir, and I think that you have to look at the legal definition of incompetent. Because incompetent, you could be incompetent for the moment. You could have a heart attack and fall over, so therefore you were incompetent to do that job. If you are incompetent over a long period of time, hopefully the licensing examination process will have weeded you out and you will not have gotten there. So I think that the problem that you're having with is the legal definition of the word incompetent. And it's a broadly defined thing, so therefore it's hard to put that into this law to say incompetent and decide exactly what that means in each and every case.
Or guilty of misconduct.
Right.
Further questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much. Next, Mr. Michael Smith.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Spence, representing Alaska Coastwise Pilots. I'd like to comment, first of all, briefly introduce myself. I've been a Marine pilot in southeastern Alaska, going on 19 years. I also hold federal pilot licenses in Puget Sound, San Francisco, and the common waters of New Jersey and New York, and I have also worked as a Marine pilot in those waters. I'd like to comment in support of the bill as written. And I would also like to comment on the issue of competition in very general terms initially. From my firsthand observation in Alaska and also in the other states that I have worked, competition is not only widespread, but it is increasing nationally. There have been no findings by any state entity, any agency, or any federal agency that this competition has adversely affected public safety. And since public safety is, as you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, the primary objective of the regulation of pilotage, we feel that the state of Alaska has taken a wise course to neither promote nor to discourage competition in marine pilotage. We feel that this policy allows the state to focus on the issues that are directly pertinent to public safety, and that is safety or competence of pilots and accountability to safe standards of pilotage. That being said, there are a couple of things here that I think I can help clarify some of the earlier questions in this legislation, the one regarding the membership and the composition of the board. First of all, in the early 70s, when the present makeup of the board was set up, there were two regions of pilotage in the state in practice, and there were approximately 30 pilots in the entire state. Now you have four regions as defined in statute, and you've had over 100 licensed pilots. Presently, the number is in the high 80s. Commerce has increased dramatically in the western region, also the southeastern region. So the situation that has evolved is that with two members on the board, inevitably one region is not represented with any expertise on the board. Questions come up to this board routinely that require the expertise of a pilot on the board in a particular region. As presently composed, you have a built-in limitation that you're only going to be represented in two of the regions. Three of the four regions, I believe, should not go without representation on the board. For that simple reason, the board cannot adequately address the issues that are unique to each of these regions without having the additional members. So the intent was to add the additional expertise for an additional region without disturbing the balance of power as it might be referred to on the board. So therefore, the request was made by industry to also increase their member on the board by the same number. The other issue that has come up here is regarding the $250,000 limitation of liability. This is a feature that was added in the 1991 legislation as a result of the great difficulty that marine pilots had in obtaining any insurance for any kind of liability, civil liability. We could get insurance for defense against license actions, but none, no underwriter would touch the potential liabilities that would arise in a marine disaster. So following the models that had been set in other states where pilots had been bonded or had been given statutory limits of liability, we asked for this and it was granted in the 1991 legislation. However, the wording, as it was written in that legislation, says that any kind of a sanction issued by either the Coast Guard or the state, which could be a very minor sanction, and I might add that it's likely that in any kind of an incident there is going to be some kind of a sanction, that exclusion or that limitation of liability becomes invalid. So the changes that are made in this legislation are to let it happen that the limitation of liability can be struck in a case of gross negligence or, as was mentioned earlier, in a case of involvement of drugs or alcohol. But for other minor, or more minor, I should say, violations, that limitation of liability stands. We are supporting this legislation as written, and we encourage this committee to pass it. If you have any questions otherwise, thank you very much.
Representative Dean. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this board's main function is obviously safety, and coming from an area that has seen what happens when good pilots aren't on board and making ships go the right direction. I don't care if you increase the board so you have one from every region, but I personally want to see a private person also on that board, so because I believe that is their position. I think you have a vested interest, and the industry has somewhat different vested interests, and I think that private person is the safety of, and the, you know, the environment, everything out there to see things are done right. And my understanding is this board is paid for by their own fees, and if they want to raise the fees to do that, I don't object, but I would like to see the individual, the private individual also on there as well.
Through the chair, if I could just comment briefly to that. I think the point made by Mr. Bush is very well taken, that in practice now you have two public members on the board and you have the commissioner's designee, who also is, in practice, a representative from the public sector. And I think that there's a balance that's there now, although we would certainly not oppose the addition of another member from the public if it was felt that would preserve a balance. If I could just add one more comment, I forgot earlier, on the issue of tariffs. We strongly urge the legislature to get away from the practice of economic regulation of pilotage in the form of tariffs. If it is found to be necessary to satisfy other interests to have some form of tariff regulation, we would hope that it would be a maximum tariff and not a fixed tariff. And again, the reason for this is that the primary purpose for the state's regulation of pilotage is safety. And tariff regulation has proven to be something that's very burdensome, time-consuming. The board has lacked the expertise to deal with it effectively. All parties involved, I think, have agreed that tariff regulation is a dead loser for a state that has limited resources with which to manage the board. So,
further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Mr. Antonson, am I close?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Hans Antonsen, and I'm representing Southeastern Alaska Pilots Association. We have an association that operates in Region 1 from Dixon Entrance as far as north, as west then as Yakutat Bay. We employ approximately 31 pilots, both full-time and part-time, to cover the needs of shipping in that region. So we represent a sizable amount of the pilotage going on in Region 1 and in the state. I would like to comment respectfully on Section 2 that SEPA supports maintaining the seven-man board. A primary reason for that is that we believe, as has been previously testified, that the public constituency on the board should not be watered down. The public is that representation on the board that looks out primarily for safety, and we would support a seven-man board composed of all public members if there was no need for pilots to be on the board to be there for licensing exams, expertise for the licensing examination process. As it is, we support the board in a form that has worked fine for a number of years. We believe a nine-man board gets cumbersome and difficult to work with, and there's too much chance of a balance and a quorum shifting representation unduly away from the public's interest. We also don't see where having a representative from the department constitutes public representation. I thought that was the state and the department representation. So I don't believe that you have three public members. You have two public members. We're not in favor of increasing the board. We don't see a need for that. Whether our association is represented on that board or not is not important. We think the most important thing is that the board is able to, in an efficient and timely way, address the matters before it, and a seven-man board works a lot better than a nine-man board. Five-man board works even better, but we support the seven-man board. As far as the, if I could add just a couple of comments on the questions asked concerning the limitation of liability. At the previous hearings in the Transportation Committee, it was stated that upon research, the average limitation on pilot's liability is $5,000 in pilotage regions in the United States. We have $250,000. And as stated, the reason that that number came to be was in some cases it was chance, but in other cases it was a number we felt we could get. It was a number that we felt was a reasonable cap that we could actually get insurance for. We have only two major carriers of insurance that even provide coverage to pilots. We're listed as high risk in some regards as to the type of work we do. So it's difficult to get any insurance, period. So that is the highest limitation on liability anywhere in the United States for Marine pilots. And Marine pilots are not like airline pilots. A Marine pilot, when he's on the bridge of a ship, he does not have sole control over the handling of that ship and the decisions being made in navigating that ship through waters, transiting, and also docking or undocking the ship. The man who is ultimately responsible for that ship and the safety of the ship and the crew is the master. The pilot is an advisor to the master. So the concern that a pilot may not have unlimited liability in some cases where the ship may run aground and spill oil is addressed because there's also a master who, through his seagoing experience and knowledge, must be able to look out after the safety of his ship and recognize when his ship is standing into danger. So there's a difference as far as pilots and airline pilots go, Marine pilots. And so that's why we believe that limitation of liability is, at least it's acceptable, we're able to get insurance for that amount. We believe that there is in the bill with this measure to create temporary licenses in regions to address a sudden need for pilots. We believe that that addresses the concerns that some people may have, industry, on running into a shortage of pilots and not having pilots sufficient to move the volume of ships that that comes in from year to year. But we also believe that if industry and pilots were able to work a little bit closer together in communicating new expected traffic in the future, pilots would then have a better ability to address their present and future pilot needs and be able to recruit and train pilots sufficiently to be able to serve the pilot needs of that region. But oftentimes with a competitive environment, we don't get first-hand information of new ships coming online because there's always the question who's going to do the piloting. Is it going to be Group A? Is it going to be Group B? So we we feel that by a little more closer communication, we could better address industry and the state's concern in keeping qualified pilots aboard. As far as the tariff issue goes, we also concur, and I think you've heard testimony that's unanimous among pilots, that we would like to see tariff not addressed in this bill and not in the hands of the state while we're in industry's concerns, our customers' concerns, including extending contracts if there's a dispute among particulars of a contract, including conflict resolution in the terms, in the form of binding arbitration, including not having binding arbitration. In each instance, we've addressed industry's concern and done our best that within the context of a contract to give industry whatever assurance or whatever we can to address the concerns that they may not have pilots for ships. So we feel we've been very successful in directly negotiating with industry, to private parties, and addressing all those concerns. If there's anything else that we can do within the context of these contracts that we're signing and making with industry that would address the state's further concerns or the legislator's concerns, we would be more than happy to take any suggestion you make and implement it to the best of our ability. Thank you very much.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I understood your testimony that the average limit of liability requirement outside is 5,000, or that was a claims, average claim?
The average limitation on liability of pilots is $5,000 across the United States. And that claim, that statement, I believe, was made by Bob Evans at a previous hearing, and he checked that out and researched that. And that compares, that 5,000 compares with our limitation of 250,000. Okay. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Additional questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I have to go.
We have another. Atkinson?
Sanders.
David Hines?
He's a no.
I didn't say to testify.
He's a no.
Oh, he's really a no.
He's really a no. His son.
Hey, Mr. Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Sanders. I'm the Vice President of Alaska Marine Pilots, one of the pilot groups out in Region 3, the Western Alaska region, Dutch Harbor, Aleutian Islands, Bristol Bay, and Alaska Peninsula south and west of Kodiak Island. Alaska Marine Pilots supports the bill as written. We like it just like we see it. We believe that the board should stay as it is, with the exception we believe the board should stay as it is. Two members. It is expensive. Licenses, the fees for the licenses have gone up every year since I've started piloting, and now it's $3,200 biannually. Those are significant costs, and we feel like the board is working just fine, like it has in the past with a seven-man board, and so we don't see a need to increase to nine.
So you're not in support of the current legislation as it is written?
We are, with the exception of the increase of the board. The limitation of liability has been addressed by the other pilots. Just a note, that insurance costs us around $3,200 a piece per year. It's another substantial expense, and it is quite high. So it's a redundant insurance. The ships carry insurance as well, and I believe Captain Anderson put it to you succinctly that it's not the same with just the pilot of the ship being in total control. The master is there to oversee his ship. Maximum tariff has been brought up, or tariff issues. We don't feel that any tariff should be addressed in this bill. It's not now. Things are working well for us in Western Alaska, with the absence of the maximum tariff. We haven't been able to get contracts previous to the lapse of the maximum tariff. And in the last 10 months, we have been able to get contracts with one of our main customers. In those contracts, we address conflict resolution. We have long periods of time, 3 to 5 year contracts, and we have contracts on the table with the other customers in the region, which we don't believe we would have been able to get with a maximum tariff. So we would like to see no tariff language at all. Thank you.
Questions from Sanders? Seeing none.
Okay.
Gail, I wonder if you'd come up and just address the antitrust tariff issue. We don't really have forum to move anything right now, but I think maybe we ought to at least address that particular issue.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to do that. For the record, my name is Gail Horebsky. I'm an assistant attorney general in the commercial section of the civil division of the Department of Law. And my present assignment, I'm assisting in occupational licensing matters, and the Board of Marine Pilots is one of the boards that I have been working on. If I could just make a couple of prefatory comments, Mr. Chairman. From the viewpoint of the Department of Law, this is a very good bill. There has been a lot of litigation since I have begun working with the Board of Marine Pilots on various aspects of their present statute and license issues, examination issues, etc. And I have not seen a level of litigation regarding board matters ever in my legal career as I have seen in connection with this Board of Marine Pilots. And Mr. Tuig and I have worked quite closely in drafting and reviewing this bill, and obviously there are sections that have been put in by the Pilots Alliance and by, you know, committees, but by and large, from our point of view, the amendments in this bill clear up areas that have led to litigation in the past. So we're trying to calm the waters and make it clear as best we can based on the experience. It's been about 18 months now that I've been working through the Department of Law with the board. The board has expired, Mr. Chairman. There was some testimony earlier that it was going to expire. If you take a look at, you know, I think it's section one of your bill, the board expired in 94. It is in its wind down year. If it is not extended, it is gone. So this bill, from the point of view of the Department of Law, is extremely important. And the extension of the board is absolutely essential. It has to occur during this session, because it's in its wind-down year. It doesn't have a wind-down year left. It's in it right now.
Let me just point out for the record that even though this particular bill has the extension in it, there is another vehicle that's currently in House Rules that's ready to come before what that will also extend the Board of Marine Pilots to 1999.
I see. At one point, that bill had only a one-year extension in it, but
it's changed
to Well, that would at least preserve the existence of the board, and actually I'm glad to hear that the data map is not a match to this one. But I do still think that the changes in this bill, if it is adopted this session, will vastly improve the board's ability to regulate in this area in a manner that decreases its exposure to litigation, which is one of my goals on behalf of the state. Regarding the antitrust / tariff issue, the Board of Marine Pilots had the authority to set tariffs before, and what they had under the statute was a maximum tariff that was set at a certain level, and pilot associations were free to charge less than that if they wanted, but that became a ceiling. That tariff provision expired by its own terms in June of 94. Yes. And so since that time, Mr. Chairman, there has been no tariff of any sort regarding marine pilot services in the state of Alaska, maximum fix or nothing. The board has continued to operate, and shipping has continued since the expiration of that tariff. The concern, I think, is basically a public policy concern. The reason that these ships of a certain size, a certain type, have to have a pilot is because the state says they have to have a pilot. Safety, of course, is the reason for that, but nonetheless, the reason that they need a pilot at all is because the state law says they have to. So if they are required to take a pilot and, in fact, face possible criminal sanctions and a substantial civil fine if they don't take a pilot, then right now we have a situation where the law is absolutely silent about what that pilot or that pilot association can charge for that service. And as the bill is presently structured, there is no fixed tariff provision, there is no maximum tariff provision, and there is no dispute resolution mechanism. So if a shipper needs a pilot and he calls up and asks for a pilot, and if the pilot says, you know, fine, but, you know, it'll be X amount. If a dispute arises between the shipper and the pilot as to the reasonableness of those quoted rates, there is no dispute mechanism right now specified. And so the shipper's choice, I guess, is to move the ship without a pilot, which causes safety concerns, to not move, which causes maybe commerce concerns, or, you know, to pay whatever rate, you know, the pilot is asking for. And maybe there are other options in addition to those, but those are the three that sort of jump right out at you. I mean, the shipper has been required by law to have a pilot, and that's what the law says. The concern that has come up in other committees' hearings, Mr. Chairman, is that there is a state antitrust law. Pilot associations are immune by a specific exception in the state law from any antitrust liability, so that's fine under state law. There is also federal antitrust law, generally it's the Sherman Act, and the U.S. Supreme Court has said a whole line of case law since the Sherman Act was adopted that if a state chooses to regulate in an area, fine. The federal government won't fuss in that area. The state basically preempts and regulates, then there's no antitrust liability on the part of the people who are regulated by the state. That's a sensible policy, of course. In a case that came out in June of 92, so that is, Mr. Chairman, after the 91 Act was adopted in Alaska, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the TICORE title insurance case, T-I-C-O-R-E title insurance case, that what happened is the FTC had issued a complaint against the title insurance companies in several states for basically fixing prices. And what the title insurance companies were doing was sending in rates to a rate-setting bureau, and the rate bureau set the rates. And those rates are the ones that applied in the states unless the state disapproved within a certain period of time. It was kind of a negative option. The rates were originally set by the rate bureau, but then the state had some oversight authority where they could review it and approve it or disapprove it. What the evidence showed in that case in the hearing before the FTC was that, in essence, in those states that were concerned there was no active state supervision of that rate-setting process. It was more or less a rubber stamp. In fact, some of these provisions weren't even checked for accuracy for arithmetic. You know, I mean, they're just sort of filed, and that's the rate that applied. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, for the antitrust immunity to be afforded to these people, in that case the title insurance companies, there must be two things present. There must be a clearly articulated state policy that they're going to regulate in this area. And there was in that case, because there were statutes that were passed that establishes these rate bureaus and everything. But then the U.S. Supreme Court in the TICORE title case said there also has to be active state supervision of that particular area, whether it's utilities or title insurance or pilots or whatever. And the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on the facts of that case that there was not sufficient state oversight in order to allow the title insurance companies to avail themselves of the immunity as a defense. And so this is something that the Department of Law has brought to the attention of the legislature, because our concern was possible antitrust liability of the pilots or the pilot associations under federal law if the state regulation was not sufficient under the TICORE title standards to confer this immunity upon them. As it's developed in some of the hearings, it appears that the pilot associations, based on testimony I've heard, don't want tariff provisions and really don't want dispute resolution mechanisms that were in an earlier version of the bill. And so it's like they're saying, well, we'll assume the risk of that possible liability under the federal law if and when, you know, we do anything that would violate the federal law, and I'm not saying that anybody does. That's a policy call, Mr. Chairman, and there are possible dangers presented to the associations under that approach. However, I would emphasize that it's not a danger that the state is facing, because the state would not be charged with anything under the federal antitrust. It would be the associations and the members of the associations that are possibly at risk.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gail, what kind of or kinds of behavior would the pilots typically do to get themselves in trouble with federal antitrust, assuming that they lost their state exemption?
Well, in the past, there have been some concerns about associations by their actions keeping pilots out of the profession, either out of that particular association or out of the profession in general, through not giving the training and experience and the ability to qualify for the licenses. Price fixing is another thing that federal antitrust law reaches. But the whether or not pilot associations would be liable under federal law for something like that is not clear under the present CS that is proposed, because there are two things in that bill. One, it says the pilot associations may enter into agreements with shippers to provide these services, and then it also says pilots may not charge rates that are different than the one set by their association. So the bill contains authority for the associations basically to set their own tariff. I mean, they don't call it a tariff, but it's to set their own price. And so I'm not saying that anybody is going to do anything that would violate federal antitrust law, but collusive behavior that establishes a monopoly and, you know, either goes to getting all of the business or setting the price at which services are offered, things of that collusive activity of that sort is the kind of thing that ordinarily, absent state intervention, would violate, most likely would violate federal antitrust law.
So if I could,
President,
just one follow-up. In an area that is serviced by one association, this bill provides that association will negotiate, if you will, with shippers.
May. It says may enter into agreements with, I think, is the language. I can find it for you in just a second here. It's section 12 says the board shall impose a sanction on a person licensed under this chapter when the board finds that the person, and then on page 5, line 25, collects, charges, or receives an amount of services that is different from the amount set by the organization. So that's the language that says you have to abide by the rate that your organization has set. And I'm looking for the language that talks about what the, maybe section 18, thank you. On page 7, Mr. Chairman, subsection F, a pilot organization recognized by the board may, doesn't say shall, but may enter into agreements with the master owner or agent of a vessel concerning the terms and conditions. So it doesn't say negotiate. It says may enter into agreements. And negotiate is clearly implied in there, because you never reach an agreement if you don't talk about it.
Well, if I could just... I'm not that familiar with antitrust, federal antitrust laws, but would you say that an association that represents one district that has no competition, that sets its own price, is price fixing under the, and that would be a violation?
I would not say that, Mr. Chairman, because the law gives the association the authority to do that. Our concern is somewhat... The antitrust law is an odd duck in that it allows private parties to enforce it. So, you know, one association can sue another association and seek treble damages under the antitrust law, and the state's not involved at all, the FTC's not involved at all, nobody's charging that association in an official sense with any conduct, but yet you have an antitrust lawsuit.
Or a shipper could do it.
A shipper could, yes, you bet.
President Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to ask if the under the antitrust laws and the Tycor case, that was related to prices of employees, or was it contractors? Because in this case, we're an organization, and because the pilots are contractors to the organization, not employees.
Mm-hmm.
Does that have any bearing or any relation or twist to the antitrust case that you cited?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, the facts of the Tycor title insurance case were that the title insurance companies in the states, the states involved there, put in their request for rates, and the rates were the rates that were charged by the title insurance company to members of the public for, like, title search fees and that kind of thing in connection with a house or checking out who owns land, property. So it was a fee charged by the company, companies, plural, to members of the public that were trying to sell and purchase property, real property. And if I might continue, if pilot associations were business entities and the people that worked for them were employees, then I think you get away from the antitrust issue because one company can't conspire with itself. I mean, General Motors can't conspire with itself to violate the laws. It has to conspire with somebody else, and then you get your collusive activity there. The pilots are independent contractors, not employees. So then you have the question of all the pilots coming together as independent contractors in this association. And what are the possible liabilities of the pilots? What are the possible liabilities of the associations? The pilots are required by state law to be a member of an association. It's an offense if they are not. So I think they're clearly able to say, hey, I had to do it. You know, the state law made me. And so in that sense, they're all right.
Further questions?
It's clear as mud, yes?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We just have two more signed up here to testify, and we'll allow those two to testify, and then we're going to carry this bill over until Friday. Jenny Fay.
Mr. Chairman, for the other members, the staff just came from the Resources Committee. They do have a quorum, and they're starting. Thank you.
Senate Resources is starting their hearings.
Hi, my name is Jenny Fay, and I'm testifying on behalf of Bill Walker, who's president of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council. I've submitted written testimony for them, so I'll be brief since I know you're trying to wind this up. RCAC is its work is guided by its contract with the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company and sanctioned under the Oil Pollution Act of 1990. And the residents of Prince William Sound and South Central Alaska are acutely aware of issues regarding marine pilotage and what can happen when you have oversights or minor adjustments in pilotage areas, as happened with the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Safety is RCAC's primary concern. They have no economic interest. All they care about is safe pilotage. They appreciate, over recent years, Commerce and Economic Development has done a lot of work in improving safety, improving licensing and examinations, and there has been a great deal of improvement made to the system. However, they do question whether or not a competitive system is really the safest system. Alaska is somewhat unique in that we're the only state in the country that has competitions the way that we do, because we require pilots, require shippers to use them, but then we leave a lot of the pilots can, associations can compete against each other based on fees. And while Prince William Sound has had a very good piloting system and has not been affected by it, they question whether or not the competitive system is a threat to safety in that area. They've had pilots express to them that they do not feel that they can openly say what some of their safety concerns are because of the threat of competition. I think RCAC's primary concern with this, because it doesn't appear that the legislature really is interested in addressing the issues of competition, which is probably one of their greatest concerns. Their most significant problem they have with the bill right now is the change in the board makeup, that the Marine Pilot Board is a safety board, it's a licensing board. The reason industry traditionally has sat on the board was because the board was setting tariffs. And so it made sense to have licensing, have the pilots and the industry, when the tariffs are being set, sit there along with the public who is interested in safety. If they're not going to be setting tariffs, then the question comes up, why not just have it a piloting board, pilots and the public on it? That is probably unlikely to happen, but I think the changes that were made in the composition was that the public is really not highly represented in these hearings, and so the pilots wanted somebody, another member on the board, and so industry wanted another member on the board, and there really wasn't anybody to say, wait a minute, this is supposed to be a public safety issue. And I'd also like to add that I do not think there is another board in the state that calls an employee of a state agency a public member. Technically, that's I mean, any public members, on any boards are public members, not agency members. So I guess the RCAC's position is that they would like the board either left alone, or they would like a public member added along with the additional pilot industry member to because we think the public interest is diluted with that change. And that's my testimony.
Okay, Jenny.
Okay.
Questions? Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just sorry, I didn't get my notes here, but you said something about the legislature wasn't interested in doing what? Is it the competition or what?
I've been under the impression from the hearings to date that the issue of competition to going to a fixed tariff and being a much more regulated system prior to 1991, it does not appear that level. Maybe I'm wrong, but my impression is that the legislature is unlikely to do that. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, you said competition. I was wondering what you meant. I think that's...
By going away from having a fixed tariff.
I would agree that, at least from my understanding and talking to some of the members of the legislature, they are interested in establishing a fixed tariff. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Allow me to comment on that and clarify. The legislation put together here was an attempt to deal with the issues that the pilots and industry were dealing with, and that was not something that was brought forth. The regulated monopoly question was not something that was proposed by anyone, and we wanted to deal with the involved parties. So that's where there was discussion. It came up in discussions, but it was never formulated as to being included in the bill.
We got one more person to testify. Maybe we got to get that out of the way. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kyle.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Joe Kyle, and I represent the Alaska Steamship Association, so this is really, I think I'm the only person here testifying on behalf of the shipping industry. And I would say that our membership includes just about includes everybody in the state that's required to use state pilots, with the exception of Prince William Sound. And the agencies that work there are in our association, but not ARCO or BP or Deep River. That may sound like a huge exception. However, if you look at how many state pilots are required, how many state pilot moves are required throughout the state over the course of a year, our membership probably represents 80 or 90% of the revenue that is paid out to pilot associations, because all the moves in Southeast with cruise ships, Cook Inlet Oil, and the tramper trade in the Bering Sea and Sealand and APL. So we are the most significant user of state pilots in the state. As far as the bill that you have before you, much like Deputy Commissioner Bush said, we think it's a great bill with one major glaring deficiency, and that is that there is nothing in this act that addresses dispute resolution or conflict resolution or maximum tariff between industry and pilots, and it is... It's just Pollyanna, pie in the sky, to think that pilots and industry are not going to fuss over what it costs to move a ship. And it's somewhat simplistic to say, well, you've got competition, why do you need somebody to help you adjust price if you can't agree? Well, we have a very limited number of service providers. We can't go shop around for another service provider if we reach an impasse with a pilot association over price. There were over 120 licenses in the state a couple of years ago. There's around 80 right now. At the same time that we've lost over 40 licensed pilots in the state, the number of ships and vessel traffic is moving up. So there's a greater demand for pilot services. At the same time, the number of licensed pilots in the state is going down. Likewise, through regulatory action taken by the board, there are significant impediments to entry into this profession, and they're legitimate impediments. We want a rigorous training program and certification program. So what I'm telling you there is it's really long to push somebody through the pipeline to make that number that's around 80 right now move to a higher number. the state said that they're very concerned about safety and availability of pilots, and I can tell you right now today that it is possible that we will run short of pilots in southeast Alaska this summer with the increased cruise traffic, and it's almost a certainty that we will be pilot short in southeast Alaska in 1996. And under that scenario, it's just not possible that we're going to get in a situation with pilots where we've got a new ship, there's no existing contract, what's the number to move this ship, and we feel the number that's going to be presented to us is way too high, and we're going to say we can't live with that number. Can we negotiate? And we really don't have anybody to negotiate with. Even where we have competition, there's two associations in southeast Alaska right now. They used to all be the same. They all came, they were the same group, and they splintered. And next week, they can go back together. And then we've really got nobody to negotiate with. Same thing out west. There are two associations out west. They splintered. And you can't go grow a third very quickly. I mean, they're just going to come from who they are. And next week, they could join back together and be one pilot association. It's all up to them as to whether there's competition or not. And yet we've got to bargain with them and deal with them on rates. And so, the situation that, I mean, we can take care of ourselves under that scenario, I suppose, although we run a great risk of moving a ship without a pilot. But there's also a state interest involved here. And we're required to use their services. The state requires that we use their services. We want to use their services. But what do we do when we can't agree on price? And, I personally don't understand how the state can walk away from that and say, well, that's not an issue we're concerned about, because that's where it's going to, when that happens, that we do move a ship into state waters without a pilot, and God forbid an accident would occur on that same ship that didn't have a pilot aboard. We're going to pay no matter what the industry is, but I think the state's going to pay a severe price for not having some mechanism in its Marine Pilot Act to resolve disputes. We have tried everything we could to get the pilots to like something. And for various and sundry reasons, they oppose it. And I think, in our judgment, the underpinning to all this is this regulated monopoly versus free and open competition. There are certain very strong pilot associations that, just desperately want a regulated monopoly. And there are legitimate reasons for them to feel that way. We're not going to say that's, they shouldn't feel that way, but they are definitely want that, and they're going to do anything they can to prove competition doesn't work. And you hear this argument this afternoon about, hey, we got competition. Why do you need conflict resolution if you can't agree on rates? The state shouldn't be involved in setting a tariff. We don't have competition in the sense of, there's half a dozen vendors we can go shop with if we don't like dealing with this hardware store. We've only got two. It's just like when we had Exxon and Union 76 here in town. Yeah, we had competition in gasoline stations, but the price was $1.65 and $1.66. And every month or two, they flip-flopped around. Then MAPCO came to town, and prices dropped 30 or 40 cents a gallon for gas. Well, that's the kind of competitive situation we live with right now. We have two, and they all came from the same group. They all trained each other. They are professional colleagues, and we fully expect they'll go back together one day, probably. So, we just think that it's poor public policy if this act cannot in some way get a conflict resolution article section in it. We tried the maximum tariff. That worked for 3 years. We tried desperately to get the maximum tariff extended last session. We were fought by the same pilot associations this year that when we said, fine, you don't like the maximum tariff, how about binding arbitration? Most public employee slant public service type occupations like binding arbitration. We ran that up the flagpole. Nope, they don't want binding arbitration. So then we said, fine, how about conflict mediation? Let's go through a mediation process so that if you and me disagree over price, you'll still provide the state's mission by moving my ship, and I'll pay into an escrow account someplace while a third party figures out what the right price should be. No, we don't want that. You've got a competitive environment. We're not going to deal with that either. We don't know where to go. We've pulled all the rabbits out of the hat we have. That's binding arbitration, conflict resolution, and we tried to get the maximum tariff last session. We're willing to give you anything you might want that'll help get us out of this box. But the pilots, I think, because there are some that are just philosophically opposed to competition, are going to oppose anything that might help it work. And that gets us back to conflict resolution or maximum tariff or binding arbitration. So we're not going to be happy or be able to support this bill if there isn't something in there, be it binding arbitration or conflict resolution, mediation, or a maximum tariff, that provides us some rate protection when we have a very limited market to deal with and a compulsory service to use.
Thank you. Joe, what do you do right now when you transverse a ship through an area that only has one pilot group in that region? And they establish the rates, and let's say it's a rate that you can't live with.
Yeah, right now, the reality of where we have that right now is in Prince William Sound and Cook Inlet and the Kodiak area. And we negotiated a contract with that single service provider, I want to say the summer of 93, that was a three-year deal that would take us past, you know, the maximum tariff expiring last summer and the board maybe this summer. So when we negotiated a contract with them, that contract would take us through this uncertainty in the legislature. And right now we have a good contract with them. We deal very professionally with them. They deal very professionally with us, and we've got a good relationship. And, you know, and I think that will continue. When we do have new business with them, they sit down and negotiate with us in a very respectful and, you know, professional manner, and we've been able to reach an agreement with them up to this point. One thing that induces them, of course, to deal with us that way is there's always the threat of competition in their area. I mean, it would be easy for a group, say, to splinter off and form a Cook Inlet Pilot Association or a Kodiak Pilot Association. So they want to do business well with us. I mean, they'd like to stay intact and not have disgruntled members and form a new association. So, the threat of competition in that region, I think, helps bring them to the table with us. And they do a hell of a job for us, and they provide a great service. And so that's what brings us to the table to want to negotiate with them. The relationships in the other regions aren't as harmonious. And they weren't before there was a splintering off. And they haven't been since.
And if I might, we've talked a little bit about the board makeup. Would it be safe to assume that industry supports the bill as it is written with the additional member from industry on the board?
From an intellectual point of view, the region out west should be represented on the board by both pilots and industry. It's a totally different business out there. It's a totally different trade. It's mostly Pacific Rim shipping companies and the fishing business, bringing trampers that are Korean or Japanese or Chinese or whatever into the Bering Sea. They hit the western Alaska ports and go back to the Far East. That's a very different shipping trade than we have down in Southeast or Prince William Sound or Cook Inlet. You do have Sealand and APL out there that somewhat are more Cook Inlet and Southeast in their makeup. You know, so academically, yeah, there should be a pilot from the Western Alaska area on the board. And the industry problems are unique out there. You know, I mean, the gentleman from out there mentioned they've never had signed contracts with industry out west, and I would disagree with them as to why they do have a few now. But the reason has been the trade is totally different. You know, it's oriented around the fishing industry. It's very seasonal. It's non-predictable. The ships come over when the herring come in, or when the salmon come in, or when the crab come in, or, you know, so depending on how many crab are caught this year, or not caught. Cruise ships, we know years in advance almost how many cruise ships are coming up. Cooking at oil runs are very predictable. So, from an academic point of view, absolutely, that representation should be on the board. We're concerned about the public input as well. We feel like the department is on there to represent the public. We don't divorce the state from the public the way some of the testimony has today. But, it comes down to money. The board, I would say, has been very generous about letting the Western region pilots come up and speak to their problems in front of the board. Likewise with industry, they've let us do that too. But, and that's a long answer to your question, I guess, but it comes down to money. Academically, they should be represented, yeah.
I think Ms. Fay, previous testifier, pointed out the state's really responsible for safety. And I'm just kind of curious, based on my understanding of what the board does, and albeit that this provision does not establish a fixed tariff or even establish a maximum tariff, what would the role of industry be on that board?
Well, I object strongly to several things Ms. Faye said. First of all, she said we're the only state in the country with competition, and that's just a gross misrepresentation or inaccurate statement. It's rare on the East Coast. I think Connecticut and maybe either Maryland or Virginia is about it. But on the West Coast, you know, the way piloting is done is all over the board. Hawaii's got a competitive system. Port of San Diego, you don't even have to have state pilots if you come into the port, you know, more than 10 times a year. San Francisco has a regulated monopoly. Long Beach has a private company with contract pilots that the city hires. In the Port of Los Angeles, they're municipal employees of the city of Los Angeles. You know, so it's all over the board on the West Coast. And you know, in terms of industry's interest on the board, I mean, I think that's a cynical, you know, statement she made. We need pilots to help us around waters that our ships don't come into that often. And we are very, very interested in the level of training they get, what the training program is, what the recertification program is, what the licensing program is. We pay their, you know, we pay their ticket, if you will. And as long as we're paying that tariff and we're paying their ticket and they're going to be advising our masters of how to move ships in and out of state waters, we want to be part of that process. We're a stakeholder in this. And I really think that's a very, I mean, I don't understand the remark at all, is saying we shouldn't be on the board. I mean, we're paying all the bills and it's our ships that we're putting a state pilot aboard. You know, it's a significant financial issue for us in terms of, you know, whether we make money or lose money operating in Alaska. And we want pilots that are well trained, and we want to have a hand in that program that they're training through.
Just in her defense, I'm not so sure she said that we shouldn't have industry on the board. That was kind of what I was leading into.
Okay, well, I apologize to Jenny. I don't think she went, I think she went upstairs, but I apologize to her.
But I apologize.
She'll get me later.
There was another
person. It wasn't you.
Representative Porter.
Well, in fairness, that's the impression I got, too, so I don't know.
Are there questions, comments for trial? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're going to close the public testimony on House Bill 260 at this time, and we'll reconvene on Friday, 3 o'clock, and pick up right where we left off, try to do something together. We do any of the members here in the committee have any recommendations, amendments, please prepare them and have them to me early, so distribute them to the other members. No other further business. We are adjourned at 6:04.
I've been tied up with this already. I think I'm left with 30 or 40
seconds.
I don't have their schedule left, but I'll thank you for that. I would be there.